Hi, Damien. Robin Shavitz here. Congratulations on the lobby. It's going to be a terrific podcast, and I can't wait to listen. My time as a lobbyist was phenomenal. 35 years of making laws good for the state and helping a client or two along the way and meeting fabulous, interesting characters, people, a rogues gallery. Best of luck. We wish you well.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Center Maryland's The Lobby. And today we have three of the finest people you'll ever see in a statehouse lobby or even in the Capitol in Washington. We have David Carroll and Sushant Sidd from Capital Strategies. And we also have Len Foxwell from Tread Avon Strategies. I'm going to start with you, Len. You're on the Eastern Shore. Talk to me about where that name comes from for the new firm.
So, Damien, thanks for having me on the show. David, Sushant, it's good to see you guys, as always. So, Tread Avon, for those who visit or live on the Eastern Shore, it's the name of one of our largest rivers on the shore. It's a tributary of the Chesapeake Bay, and it happens to be, a fork of it happens to be located like less than half a mile from where I live. So it's an important part of our environment and our ecosystem and our economy, but it also has a double meaning for me because about 5 years ago, and I should back up and remind your listeners and viewers that I live in Talbot County. 5 years ago, we had a real need here for a youth soccer league that actually provided a quality experience for kids throughout our communities. And along with my friend, Robbie Gill, who's the CEO of our YMCA here in Talbot County, we got together and created something called FC Tread Avon, which we like to say provides a travel soccer experience at rec league prices. And through just marketing and attention to detail and hiring, bringing in the best volunteer coaches and staff and refs, we now serve over 700 kids each season, ages 4 to 14, and we have really brought this, a community that can sometimes be divided along race and class and income, we've really brought them together through the world's greatest game, and it's been amazing to see. So when I was looking for a name for this new firm, I went back to my roots, and people think I'm an Anglophile or something like that, but I'm not. I'm just an Eastern Shoreman who loves the river and loves good soccer.
Let's see, if I name my firm that, somebody would think there was some sort of Falstaff allusion in there. But talk to me about, before we get to David Sushant, talk to me about what you're focused on in your new firm.
Sure. So Tread Avon Strategies is not a lobbyist. We're not a lobbying firm. If you need quality representation in Annapolis, I can refer you know, two amazing people seated to my lower left and lower right. Your lobbying needs can be served through Capital Strategies. I do issue advocacy, communications, and political consulting. So I break it down into the three C's: corporations, causes, and candidates. And so far, I wasn't sure what to expect, honestly, because I've never done anything remotely like this after 25 years in state government. I didn't know if I would hang a shingle and then have this bizarre moment like with the Blue Moon Detective Agency where no one would come through the door. I'm very grateful and pleased that the response has been positive, and I now have clients in each of those three spaces and a client list that seems to be growing, well, literally by the day, because we memorialized the relationship earlier this morning. So it's going very, very well, and I appreciate it.
We've got two great advisors here on the business side and the communications and legislative side. David Sushant, you started your firm 21 years ago, I think. And, you know, it was a new sort of energy that you brought to Annapolis, really focusing a lot on strategy and the world that's outside the lobby, as well as the very direct access that you, David, someone from the Clinton administration days, and Sushant as the deputy chief of staff to Paris and Glendenning, you know, you really were trailblazers out there. And I just want to, somebody like me who started a business after you, I just want to thank you for giving me the confidence to do what I do, which is, I'm sure, gives the confidence for Len to do what he does, you know? So thank you so much. I'd love to hear about what you're doing.
Well, Damian, thanks. And you know, as much as things have changed over 21 years, I think 21 years ago when we set this up, we really were looking at the landscape here. We're looking at people that were not operating ethically. One was probably foundation of this business straight out of the gate. But two, you know, we saw that the way things were being done in Washington had drastically changed. I mean, people needed all the other parts of advocacy to get the coverage to make the right decisions, whether it was connecting with constituents, whether it was polling, whether it was back in the days of just good old direct mail. We brought all those kind of campaign tactics to the fore for our clients and for their, you know, issue advocacy. I mean, sure, the day-to-day, face-to-face part of lobbying is critical, along with building all those relationships. But, you know, a modern elected official needs the coverage of all of those other facets of advocacy.
Sushat, what?
No, I'll chime in. One, I want to remark, you know, I'm blown away by the Len reference to moonlighting. It's quite something. But, you know, just to echo a little bit what David was talking about in terms of how we approach lobbying. I mean, I think we bring a little bit of what you, Damian, and Len bring to the corporate advocacy world in terms of a lobbying campaign. I mean, we do utilize media, digital advertising, grassroots, grass tops, organizing, and we bring that to a lobbying perspective. And I think it's actually proven to be effective over the last 20 years.
Guys, an interesting thing about the setup that you all have as practitioners in the lobby is that, you know, maybe Len can work on a few things that you are working on, but you guys can also do separate things. That's got to give your network more of a sort of vibrant effect, I would think. Any reaction to those thoughts?
Well, I agree. And that was a really key part of the impetus for getting involved with Len and Tread Avon. But I think it also affords us greater flexibility across all of the spectrum. And it also allows us to continue to develop the relationships on the back end that Sushant and I need to do, you know, the hand-to-hand combat lobbying. Len knows every town councilman across the state. And as those people continue to, you know, climb the ladder of politics, it's good to be able to have that conduit through that to be able to know these guys and win them when they get here.
Yeah, that's a big deal, Len. I think that you'll find is your expertise with local governments and your ties to municipalities all across the state is something that lobbying firms and public affairs firms have some attention to, but I don't think anybody's bringing the depth that your public service has brought to that equation. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think so, Damian. And it's an important part of my political work as well. And, you know, I'm just seeing it in this as we gear up for the 2022 political cycle here in Maryland. I'm seeing whether it's due to a confluence of natural causes, you know, young politicians have climbed through the municipal and county government ranks, and now they're interested in taking that next step, launching generational challenges to longtime power brokers, or whether these are just people who are inspired to get more involved in the political system because of the events of the past 4 years in our country. Seeing more and more local government officials that are at least taking serious looks at the next political step on the ladder. And I found that my work with the comptroller's office for the past 13 years, where among many other things, we have been the, at least on paper, the supervisor of our state's registers of wills, because we administer the estate tax. I say we, the comptroller's office administers the estate tax, or because the comptroller's office collects local income taxes on behalf of Maryland's 194, I believe, cities, counties, towns, special taxing districts. That's given me a pretty good network of relationships so that I can maybe be that first call for some of these local mayors or council members or aldermen who are looking at maybe doing something a little bit more than they're doing right now. And I think that's going to be a real storyline to watch as we get deeper into the 2022 midterm cycle.
David, one of the things you taught me over the years, I think, is that this profession is a marathon and not a sprint. And I would love to hear your point of view. You know, you came from a world of deep executive influence, the presidency, right? Doesn't get more significant than that. I had the good fortune of a lot of people that I was close to coming into the state house and serving as the governor's staff. Sushant, you were in the midst of it yourself. How do you balance the attention to and the energy of the executive and the relationships that surround them, which just kind of feels to me like a sprint looking back on it, to that more marathon experience with the legislature? And I'd love to hear how you balance your relationships in both those spheres.
Yeah, I mean, Sushant, jump in whenever you want to, but I, you know, when I think about it, our role is more of a continuing education kind of role, right? We've got to maintain that constant information flow about how our clients are impacted by whether it's legislation, regulations, et cetera, continuously. And clearly, those things are ever changing, but there is a baseline, you know, like W.L. Gore and Associates, everyone knows they make Gore-Tex. And what they don't know is that the chemicals that they use are critical to the process. And someone, you know, someone might put in a bill here and there every other third year or so to ban those things. And we've got to continually educate not only as to, you know, the product and the process, but also the jobs up there. All those kind of things are part of the conversation. And that continual education is critical. And that's where this is a marathon. In terms of the sprint, I mean, the processes themselves are probably the key component of the sprint. I mean, a 90-day session, and with human nature being such that people don't get to things until it's the last possible minute. Certainly you feel a lot more of that sprint in those last 2-3 weeks of session. And it's critical to really be on your toes. But I think the other component of that sprint is what Len actually was just talking about. I mean, we have campaigns and elections nonstop. I mean, to think that we just got through a presidential and we're already like, hey, what are we going to do for 2022 and who's going and who's trying to climb the ladder and you know, who's going to be making the decisions on public policy in that next cycle that Sushant and I then have to go educate all over again.
Well, and I'll say this, I think it's almost the flipping of the script, Damien. I view the legislature as that sprint, right? It's 90 days, it's hectic, it's, you know, you've got folks that are, you know, it's truly a citizen legislature. So you have folks that are, you know, come from various backgrounds, various parts of the state. And there is that necessity to educate a lot more. Whereas you've got the executive branch, you know, those folks are typically doing their jobs day in and day out, you know, throughout the years. There's a lot more experience from an executive branch perspective. And a lot more, I think, level of education and or just making sure that your clients' perspectives are shown to legislators, because those decisions are come a little bit quicker and not necessarily with as much investigation. And I think all of us have been through the legislative process here. And, you know, we understand you get a hearing, you get your 2 minutes, you get to say your piece, and then, you know, the process takes hold. And not to say that there's not robust debate, but it's just it's a quicker process and doesn't necessarily lend itself to as much research and investigation.
Yeah, Damien, I want to build on that point, the points that David and Sushant made. And I think that one of the to the extent that there is a shortcoming in our political system, it's that the legislative branch practitioners don't necessarily have a full understanding of the responsibility of the executive branch and vice versa. You know, those who serve in the executive branch who are accustomed to, you know, getting things done with the flip of a switch, with a directive, may not come to the table with a full appreciation for the deliberative culture of the legislative branch. And I think going back to what we talked about regarding local mayors and city council members maybe taking that step up and perhaps running for legislative seats, I can only see that as a positive development if some folks who have worked on the executive branch side in our local governments, county commission, county council presidents, county executives, mayors, were to actually come into the legislative body with an understanding of that need for a balance of cultures between the executive and legislative branches. I can only see that as a positive thing for the process. And I hope that some of those people do decide to make that leap and do decide to run and maybe hire Tred Avon Strategies in the process.
speaking of that, Len, when I started thinking about this stuff as a profession, there was David Hamilton, who's alumnus of the Gilman School, like David Carroll. See, I'm a Baltimorean. I don't even know what college he went to, but he was Governor Ehrlich's sort of right-hand man and counsel. And then he started this practice that was all dedicated to, I'm going to be a lobbyist, but I'm just going to focus on the administration. He also has a law firm. And I was like, wow, look at this left-handed specialist. I like this. And it sort of gave me the thinking, like, man, maybe I could do something like that where I'm not necessarily competing with these giants that we have on the screen, or Josh and Tim, all these people. I mean, we got some good lobbyists, and it's a murderer's row to look at and say, where do I fit in, especially if you're coming behind them. And so I sort of, Steve had come out of Washington and help Bob Dole, Ann Richards, George Mitchell, all those people as their head of communications at a firm that was ultimately bought by DLA Piper, and didn't see that sort of specific communications dynamic. I mean, you just see this evolution from the super lawyer to then sort of the mainstay lobbyist like Bruce or Jerry. And then you saw the firm come into play, and then you saw what you guys brought, which was sort of a more comprehensive experience than us, and now Len, and so there's a bit of a progression for the client. I think it's a long wind up here, guys, but I guess my point is the client went from saying, look, I got my lawyer in the law firm, that's what I have the budget for. Today, you have budgets for the law firm, for the lobbying firm that's separate, and now even potentially communications like Len or myself. And then now even more budgets for, the campaign tactics that David and Sushant talked about. I'd love to hear your reaction to my thoughts about that progression.
Well, Damien, I think that, while it is more of a full service approach, we've worked with you, we're clearly working with Len. There is that need for that very specified or detailed, need for a client. So while we can service the lobbying needs, they're going to need ultimately that communications effort that gives that politician cover, communicating directly with their constituents. So that, they understand, not only do we get to persuade them individually, but they also understand that somebody else like a KO is reaching out to their constituents and making sure that they have cover back at home.
Yeah, Damien, I think that the nature of the industry has progressed because the nature of the legislative process itself has evolved. And I've been in this town now for 20, I guess going on 26 years. And there was a time back in the day when the lobbying process was pretty straightforward. Somebody puts in some well-intentioned bill that would help somebody, but gore someone else's ox. And so a lobbyist was hired to kill the bill, right? And they went and made a few phone calls, made a few strategic visits. And just like that, the bill got put in a drawer, voted down in committee. And I don't think that's the nature of the business these days. Our political process has become far more transparent. What with the rise of digital media and a 24/7 media culture, our legislative branch in particular has become younger, more progressive, more activist, and I think that's great. And so you can't just kill bills in the back room anymore like we did in 1995. You have to be able to not only achieve a certain outcome, you have to tell a story. And so we're not just advocating for, you know, Senate Bill 500 or against House Bill 500. We're telling a story to not only legislators, but also to external stakeholders. And that's where that more rounded approach has to come in, from just the, you know, a power lawyer to something that's more synergistic of the between the legislative process and the public.
Well, and I think, you know, to add in another component of that, a major piece of the growth of that spectrum of services is because all of these states are taking on the issues, because Washington, D.C. has not taken on the issues for 20 years. I mean, the growth of state house lobbying practices and government affairs practices as a, again, a whole spectrum of services across the country has dramatically increased versus the increase of lobbying in Washington, D.C.
David, talk to me about that. With your experience and Sushant's experience, you've been a tie, sort of like a capital to capital tie, I would say, as part of your narrative. Why do you think we don't see more of that? I mean, we've got like everybody from Nancy Pelosi to Steny Hoyer to Chris Van Hollen, all with these, Maryland ties, obviously as electeds, but also through the political organizations they came up in. It just seems like, and then you have all the Marylanders and Delawareans and Virginians getting into the Biden administration. You know, how much can you connect those two circles, or does more involvement, the more you involve yourself in DC, does that kind of eschew DC lobbyists for maybe referring something back to you in Maryland as from a business development aspect? I'd love to hear your take on that.
I think, again, Sushant, dive in where you want, but I think the nature of our relationships in DC are with folks we worked with so long ago in DC, and that's from client development perspective, right? So those folks know that, you know, David Carroll has a long time relationship with Chris Coons, and it's highly targeted, and it's, hey, I need you, can you just set up a meeting for us with Chris, because, you know, they'd have no relationship. So it's working those old networks for us.
Can I just say something right real quick there on that, on the Chris Coons dynamic? I was working for a person in that executive level, and Chris Coons was a Newcastle County executive, and they both won an award. And Chris Coons was like, "Hey, do you want to go out to dinner and celebrate?" And I think one of the executives I was working with just wasn't focused on that, or thought, you know, maybe Delaware, small county. And I think of it now, and I'm like, it's a marathon, you know? And so just connected to your point there.
But I mean, literally, that guy was one of my, he was a cold call donor call I made when I was working at the Democratic Business Council, at the Democratic National Committee in 1995 or four. And he was the general counsel for W.L. Gore.
Ah.
And here you go, that relationship all the way to now, where W.L. Gore has been a client of ours for 20 plus years because of Chris Coons. But people, you know, going back from those days even, understand and know and remember those relationships. And that's kind of how we are still so interconnected into the Washington, D.C. scene. But yeah, it's pretty targeted. It's not, right. And it's also, frankly, dependent upon control of the Senate,
right?
You know, we hadn't had the Senate in so long that, frankly, our own Maryland delegation and folks like Chris Coons weren't there. Their vote wasn't all that important on things.
Calling Nathan Daschle for Joe Manchin. Calling Nathan Daschle. Hey,
exactly.
Sushant, talking about the business of lobbying, you know, and this might be helpful for Len too. You know, when you start your firm, you're sort of like, you're hungry, you'll take everything, right? Sometimes you end up eating a little more junk food or milkshakes than nutrition from a client standpoint or an issue standpoint, maybe. And I'm just wondering how you able to, you may not have had this issue, but how do you sort of get from that world to the world of, I've got a 22-year-old client, right. And, you know, so that, there's something about that shift, isn't it? And there's something about your confidence in your practice. What is it that allows you to make that move, or how do you make that move?
You know, it's a very funny question, Damien. To this day, David and I talk about this all the time. We don't know how we get clients. I think maybe it's just, you know, you do it for, you know, you're hungry at the beginning. It's a very scary prospect. I mean, all of us, I think, have been in the same boat of starting a new business. And when you first start out, I mean, you've got to be hungry. You know, hours are long. You're driving all over the place. There's a fun aspect to it, but it's also driven by, I guess, you know, a little bit of fear, a little fear of failure. And that transition happens. I think it's gradual. You know, I still worry about the business and the business development side of things. I think being comfortable maybe breeds a little laziness. So, I mean, staying hungry is definitely important. But I don't know when that comfort level happens or when it starts, but I guess over time it does settle in a little bit. And thank God for that.
Let any thoughts? Yeah, right. Let any thoughts on that? You're on the young, scrappy, and hungry Hamiltonian end of this conversation. How's it going?
Well, I'm scrappy and hungry. I as evidenced by the gray hair I'm looking at in this screen right now.
But yeah, in our business.
And that's right. And very young. Yeah. That's exactly how it's been. I mean, that's the hours have been long. I've noticed that a couple of the early casualties of my transition to the private sector have been Fridays and weekends. You know how it is in government. You know, when you work a pretty steady clip Monday through Thursday, and then Friday you kind of can, barring a special occurrence, you can kind of glide path into the weekend, right? And then the weekend is yours. That is long gone. I'm looking at my calendar for tomorrow as we speak, and I have 6 calls lined up, and I'm driving to a meeting at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon. And so I'm working harder than I ever have. And I always pride myself on my work ethic in government, but I'm working harder than I ever have. I'm working longer hours. And to be completely honest, I couldn't be happier.
That's great.
I am loving every damn minute of this. And I haven't done it before, so I'll do it, take this opportunity now just to give my just limitless appreciation and thanks to Sushant and David for not only giving me the push I needed to take this step, but also just having been there throughout the gestation phase of this business to answer what must have seemed at the time like an endless litany of silly questions from someone who's never been on this side of it. So, gentlemen, thank you. Mad love and respect for helping me get to this point.
Anything we in the political space? Well, first in the session space, I feel like the graduate where the guy goes over to Dustin Hoffman and says, "Plastics, son, plastics. It's healthcare, son, healthcare." I feel like I got into the wrong profession and the wrong industry. Sometimes love to hear. Just general thoughts on what you're seeing in Annapolis this year.
I think, you know, Sushant and I were on a call yesterday with a committee chair, and literally I thought it was, you know, he was asking us how we thought it was going down here. And Sushant said something that I think kind of rings true for, we're not even going to talk about issues, but the actual value of an in-person face-to-face 1-minute conversation in a hallway or out on the steps is you really get a sense of how invaluable that is without having it. It's nice to be able to get on a Zoom. It's nice to be able to like text someone, but it's not the same as face-to-face real quick, keeping people updated and educated.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Damien, it's just weird. I don't think there's any other way to describe it. You know, you're conditioned to do this job and, you know, interact. I mean, we're people, right? All we do is we talk to people, try to get their sense of where, you know, where things might go. And without that connection, it's difficult to do your job in the way that you typically do it and the way that you know how to do it. So it is strange. And you do kind of, as I lamented yesterday, you do forget how important that 30-second conversation is, and what it really does mean to just connecting with people, but also just how the process works. You know, it's a people business, and, you know, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
Damien, I'll take it from the political side. The mechanics of politics in this age have been completely transformed. I mean, I have a client right now, Tim Adams. He's a wonderful guy. He's the mayor of Bowie, and he's running for comptroller. And he's just an amazing person whose story will be told over the next few months leading into 2022. But you know, he's in the exploratory committee phase of his candidacy. And this is normally the time when candidates would be crisscrossing the state, meeting one-on-one or in small groups with central committee members, political activists, organizations, donors, you know,
for a self-made guy, he's going out chasing donors. You have any idea how much he's willing to put in of his own, or is he going to rely on the donor sphere out there? I bet a lot of people interested in that.
That's a great question. As Tim has said, he doesn't think it would be appropriate for him to go out and ask a donor to invest in his campaign if someone who has enjoyed such good fortune as he doesn't invest his own money in the race and put some real skin in the game. So without putting a specific number to the question, he's going to invest the resources that he needs to invest to win this campaign and to get the nomination and go on to become the 34th comptroller.
I'm making news. But it's different.
There you go. The difference is that everything is occurring
right
on a computer screen, and he's building relationships and he's doing a great job. But you know, it's still fundamentally different without that personal element. You know, having a lot, breaking bread at lunch, or having a cocktail.
It is, Len. But you know, I used you as an example the other day. I was talking to like Jeff Barker at the Baltimore Sun, and I was like, you know, in the old days, you would drive, you know, because of the old days, you'd go to the Eastern Shore, you'd have like Clay Mitchell or somebody show you around, and you'd bleed into his network or his great son's network or what have you. Still do that today, but you might do it in a different way. You might start producing content and putting it on the Scrapple trail that they started. And now you're not just talking to that cohort. You're talking to all their friends with your message. There's some opportunity there as well as,
there is. I mean, it's the transformation cuts both ways. I mean, it's different. I mean, what you lack in that political, that personal element that comes with a face-to-face, you do gain just because of the velocity with which you can conduct politics. I mean, you can have so many more meetings through Zoom than if you were driving the width and breadth of the Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, or Route 5 in St. Mary's County. So you're right. It cuts both ways, but it is just a very different set of mechanics than those of us who have been in the business for a while have become accustomed to. So just make sure you have to adapt.
Scott, David, when we were young, we used to be able to, and we didn't have kids, we used to be able to hang out in the bars and get all kinds of information and then report them back to the legislators that weren't there, or clients that couldn't be there in the room where it happened, which so often a watering hole or a lunch spot in Annapolis. As we age,
I'm going to say the same, Damien. Our colleague Todd Lamb invented a term for that. It's called wet lobbying.
Wet lobbying. I like that. I was an aficionado of wet lobbying or wet public relations. And now you got a whole new group of kids that are going to, at least this year, going to sort of miss that opportunity. But I'm just wondering how you all, without disclosing too many secrets, keep up with the intelligence machine or sometimes a lack of intelligence machine that occurs? Is it all Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn, little Instagram? What's your screen setup?
There is a large degree of following, tracking, monitoring social media. And, you know, we have here a staff that is younger and they're really good at that. And they're really vigilant. That's a key word. You know, there is still a lot of higher level direct conversations through emails, texts, Zooms, where you get some other feedback. You know, I think collectively, if we look across the people on this Zoom right here, a lot of us end up talking to the same people about the same stuff, and then it just gets circular as it always was anyway.
Right. Right. Susha.
Yeah.
You got any thoughts on that?
You know, it is.
Are you a screen? I've been telling people for 4 years, because when I went on the road with O'Malley trying to do my best imitation of David Carroll with Clinton, you know, I learned that there's so much in here. And I always say now the lobby's in your phone. I don't know if you would agree with that.
Absolutely. And particularly because of the time we're in, you know, with COVID and restrictions on just interpersonal relationships. Look, I mean, we can't do our jobs without it. Texting, calls, again, making sure that we're, you know, in tune with what's going on social media, using social media as a tool to make sure that our clients' perspectives are given to legislators. It's an invaluable tool. It'll never go away. But there's also still nothing like reading somebody in person, getting body language, and you know, I'm looking forward to those days returning.
Yeah, I remember my first meeting with Mike Miller. I've worked for in the Senate, and I took all the realtors. I represented the commercial and residential realtors in the greater Washington area, as Len remembers, when he was at the Board of Trade. I took him in there, had this fancy graphic, you know, and all our agenda. And I took it in to Mike Miller, and he gave us a tour of the back. And then he took us into the chamber, not the cloakroom, the Senate lounge to have a meeting. Thank you.
Lounge.
And we're all sitting around. He got everybody's inside family story. And then the moment I looked down at my notepad here and the cool graphics that we had spent in our agenda, I'm looking down and I'm starting to read it. And I look up and Miller is looking at me like this, with my agenda in his head, and he's just going like that. And I was like, I guess the meeting's up. So we're done there. I think that's the thing, though.
We're done.
Anyway, guys, I want to thank you so much. David, it's painful to be next to you on a screen, because you're always so well-dressed, and I knew I never am, but I did have a little surprise for you. There we go.
Oh boy, here we go.
So David I have probably been to more widespread paddock shows together than any of the anybody else in the lobby. We've probably been to 5 or 6. And I remember I was trying to impress David, and I got him front row seats at maybe Meriwether, I think. And he was like, Damien, these seats are great. They're really great, because you got to look up on the stage. And then the next time I look around, I look back, he's at the soundboard right next to like the main guy. And then I kid you not, in the second set, I look up and there's Darcy and David backstage right behind the drummer. And I'm like, I thought I got the seats. I can't keep up with this guy. So that's the story of my life in the lobby, trying to keep up with David and Carol. Great show. Thank you guys so much for everything. Really appreciate it. And please let me know guests or ghosts that I could have on the show that might support me as well. Okay?
See you guys.
No, this is